Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
It's always a pleasure to have you on board this edition of Africa Link from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Coming up, Peter Mutharika is Malawi's new president.
I feel very humbled to take office as the fifth president of the Republic of Malawi.
Cameroon vows to get tough on Boko Haram, claiming to have killed 60 of its fighters.
You reassemble the forces and map out strategies. You galvanize them and put them back into action.
Just some of the stories we have lined up for you in this edition of Africa Link. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Banda bundled out. After a chaotic election and a disputed outcome, Malawi has a new president. Peter Mutharika, brother of late President Bingu wa Mutharika, was sworn in on Monday. Outgoing President Joyce Banda snubbed the ceremony. Her spokesperson said she had not been officially invited. George Mhango with this report on Mutharika's inauguration.
I feel very humbled to stand here to take oath office as the fifth president of the Republic of Malawi.
Mutharika, leader of the Democratic Progressive Party, said he would unify the country, boost economic growth and food security. With Malawi reeling from the Cashgate corruption scandal, he also pledged to uphold the rule of law.
In this country, we need politicians who are able to tell the difference between right and wrong.
Mutharika takes office in Malawi even though he faces treason charges for attempting to conceal the death in office of his brother Bingu wa Mutharika 2 years ago in an alleged bid to prevent Joyce Banda, then deputy president, from assuming power. Mutharika asked political parties and citizens for their help in rebuilding the country. Political commentator James Sikanache says he is fairly optimistic about the arrival of the new government.
I think it will be a good government. Although we don't know about the cabinet, I think it will be a good government because knowing Peter Mutharika as he's a man of, he understands the government. We have seen this during the debates. He articulated issues. If he can live by what he said, then I think things can change for the better. He also mentioned the Zambezi Waterway project, continuing with it. It is a very good development which can help Malawi as a country to prosper.
40% of Malawi's budget comes from foreign aid. Mutharika indicated that he will appoint a lean cabinet of 20 ministers plus deputies. Previous governments used to have more than 30 ministers plus deputies.
As I said at my brother's funeral, that maybe we made mistakes in the past, but if we had mistakes, it was out of judgment, not out of evil. Let's move on towards a new Malawi.
The president of Botswana, Ian Seresi Khama, vice president of Tanzania, and other senior government officials from Malawi's neighbors attended the inauguration ceremony. The opposition United Democratic Front leader, Tweri Muluzi, who was fourth in the polls, was also present at the event. Former President Joyce Banda did not attend, nor was she present at an area swearing-in ceremony on Saturday. There was no official communication from her People's Party as to why she stayed away.
George Mhango in Blantyre. Uniting a divided nation, revamping the economy, fighting corruption, these are some of the tough tasks awaiting President Mutharika's Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP as it is often called. But Malawians have more expectations, as George Mhango found out.
Frankly speaking, I'm not happy because this DPP political party that has emerged as a winner did not win, frankly speaking, because they rigged votes.
As a civil servant, I'm very happy. Everything has gone because we are going to work. But somehow, somewhere, we are worried for our security. We are not sure. To the other side, I'm happy because he has promised some changes in the civil service department.
He should not be a dictator to some extent because his brother was somehow getting close to being a dictator, something that forced the 20 July demonstrations that left people dead.
Not impressed because this government cheated in the polls. We will meet in 2019 during another vote. We still need the Malawi Electoral Commission and the courts to tell us who won.
I think my big expectation would be the government should surprise us, because many of us never expected to say the current leadership would be governing us in the next 5 years.
I'm expecting that the DPP might bring a bit of sanity in terms of our economy. On the other hand, regarding the issues to do with human rights and all that, we believe they are the same people who used to behave like animals. There was too much impunity when they were ruling this country some 2-3 years ago. Now they are back. Same faces. I don't expect anything new in terms of governance and human rights. Looking at how they were behaving, even at the Komesa Hall, booing the MEC chairperson, you could see that they are not a changed rot. So, yeah, we expect nothing new in terms of human rights and protecting of our people's rights.
What those politicians who competed for the presidency in the just ended general elections should know that enough is enough. The campaign is now over, and as a country, we need to focus on developing this country. This is the time for the country to engage in development works and boost our economy, because we have lost a lot at a time when there was a political stalemate regarding polls.
I have a strong reservation with this Democratic Progressive Party, DPP, because the electoral issue is being challenged in court. I wonder why someone can be able to celebrate the bogus victory in such a lavish manner when the country needs money for drugs and other basic amenities.
Malawians expressing their views on their new president, Peter Mutharika.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
The death toll in the Boko Haram insurgency and counterinsurgency continues to mount. Two separate attacks at the weekend in northeastern Nigeria killed more than a dozen people. The violence is not just confined to Nigeria. Cameroon's military say they have killed 60 members of the militant Islamist sect who had sought refuge in Dabanga, a remote border town. And still in Cameroon, two Italian priests and a Canadian nun who had been kidnapped by Boko Haram 2 months ago in northern Cameroon have now been released. Moki Kinzeka reports.
The 60 heavily armed Boko Haram members were hiding in a bush in the border village of Dabanga in far north Cameroon when they were killed in a surprise attack by Cameroonian troops. The Islamist militants had crossed into Cameroon from neighboring Borno State in Nigeria. The governor of the far north region of Cameroon, Fonka Awa, urged Cameroon's troops to continue with their war against Boko Haram, which Cameroon, Chad and Nigeria declared jointly against the group last week. Awa said he was satisfied with the military's performance.
Of course, yes, without mincing words. After such a situation, you reassemble the forces and map out strategies. You galvanize them and put them back into action. And I think that's what we've just done.
People in North Cameroon who have been victims of Boko Haram's assault have saluted the soldiers for what they describe as a job well done. Ebenezer Akanga, a journalist who works with Cameroon's national broadcaster, CRTV, told me in a telephone interview that if Cameroon had engaged in such attacks at an earlier date, Boko Haram members would no longer be using Cameroon as a safe haven.
The opinion many people hold is that from the beginning, the government seemed to have been caressing the Boko Harams. The government didn't seem to have taken this fight very seriously. This is what was suspected to be done from the very word go. In fact, if the military had this type of reaction, it would have deterred the Boko Harams from crossing to Cameroonian territory. Heavy military arsenal and also troops have been deployed in the far north region, stating that the government is determined to take this fight to the Boko Haram camp and to discourage the Boko Harams from coming to the far north region.
In the past, dozens of Boko Haram members have been able to escape back to Nigeria. Ebenezer Akanga says it would not be possible for the assailants to operate in one country and escape to the other if the military from Cameroon and Nigeria were working together.
The military has to adopt different strategies, because now it doesn't simply suffice chasing away the Boko Harams. The fight needs to be taken to their very backyard.
The killings took place shortly after two Italian priests, Gianpaolo Matta and Gianantonio Allegri, a Canadian nun, Gilberte Bussier, were set free. The three were seized by Boko Haram in early April. The government of Cameroon has not said whether a ransom was paid for their release. Chadian-born Reverend Sister Marie-Claire Meda, who worked with the clergy, says there was joy in their Teche parish following their release.
I was very happy. I do not know what to say. There was joy in the church. Everybody was happy. Everybody was very happy.
Last week, Cameroon and Chad deployed 2,000 troops to the borders with Nigeria. The attack on Boko Haram in Cameroon comes as dozens of people were killed in the bombing of a football match in Mubi, Adamawa State, on Sunday. The Islamist group is being blamed for the blast.
Moki Kinzeka in Yaounde. And you're listening to DW's Africa Link from Bonn, Germany. What is Kenya's opposition leader Raila Odinga up to? Addressing a public rally on Saturday upon his return from a 3-month absence in the United States, Odinga gave the ruling Jubilee coalition 60 days to convene a national dialogue forum. President Uhuru Kenyatta has said he is ready to talk, but has ruled out sharing power with the opposition. Tom Namwamba, a lecturer at Kenyatta University, thinks the dialogue is the right way forward.
The issue here is not what Raila Odinga wants. The issue here is about the problems bedeviling the Kenya as a nation. And if you are a good observer, you will realize that since Jubilee took power, there have been a myriad of challenges and problems about this country. The problems of unemployment for the youth, the problems of undercutting the wages of the people, the problems of the government being able to service the economy, the problem of ICC, and the problem also of the collapsed civil service, the problem of implementing devolution so that it can answer to the needs and the plights of the people. All these are many, many problems that the government is facing, and it seems like the government does not have immediate solutions to this problem. The person who is suffering is a common Kenyan person who earns a living through the sale of labor.
But that is the issue here, Tom. Are the Kenyans themselves really interested in this dialogue?
It is not a question of people trying to fight a government that is in power. It is a question of people trying to gauge the ability of the government to reduce the cost of living so that the Kenyan people can be able to meet what they have to meet.
But isn't it too soon? I mean, it's just been over a year. Shouldn't they be given more time? Shouldn't the Jubilee government be given more time to fulfill their promises?
Fulfilling the promises is pegged on the kind of policies that you put in place. Fulfilling the promise is pegged on the structure of government that you create. Fulfilling the promises is also pegged on how inclusive your government becomes. But you know, people are now assessing this government on the basis of the initial structure they have created. And you will agree with me that in life, the first impression you make is what makes the impact. And that impact is not visible to the Kenyan people 365 days plus in power. And you are not making an impact. You are marginalizing areas far and far. You are exercising a level of arrogance. You are not recognizing meritocracy. And you are not distributing the wealth the way it ought to be distributed. Kenya has been a partner with the Western world for a long time. Even if you have problems of The Hague, recognition of that partnership is a necessary condition.
Tom Namwamba, lecturer at Kenyatta University.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome once again to your favorite radio drama program, Learning by Ear. This is the sixth episode of our ongoing series called The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. Just to bring you up to date, in the last episode, Linda arrived at her final destination in Europe and is about to commence her studies. Meanwhile, our friend Farahani has been sent back to Africa after trying to cross into Europe illegally. So where will the story take us today? Keep listening to find out. Today's episode is called A Continent So Near, Yet So Far. We start off with Farahani and his best friend Sule, who are watching TV. Farahani can't believe his eyes when he suddenly sees himself on the news. they're running a report about a boat full of migrants who are intercepted at sea while trying to get to Europe. Farahani hasn't told anyone about his attempt, not even Sule.
Deutsche Welle News.
Hello and welcome to a roundup of this week's news. These migrants, some from as far as Central Africa, were intercepted on Monday by officers of European border agency Frontex as they attempted to enter Europe by sea. When the boat stopped, one migrant jumped into the sea in a bid to escape detention, but he was quickly rescued by the...
Farahani, why did you change the channel? Huh? That man, he looked exactly like you. Did you see?
Of course I did.
It was you, wasn't it? And you didn't even tell me. What now? Are you still thinking about trying to cross by boat? They'll only catch you and send you back again. You know that.
So what? If they send me back, I'll try again and again and again until they recognize my face and realize I'm never going to stop trying. Then they let me in. Sule, we were so close. Persistence is the key here, my friend.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And what will you do if the European lifeguards are in there to save you from drowning?
Swim. Swim. Swim like I've never swum before. Europe. So near and yet so far.
Even his brush with death doesn't seem to have put Farahani off. Will he really risk his life again trying to get to Europe? We'll soon find out. But first, let's travel south to another part of the continent and join Linda's parents. Mr. Maraga is already worrying about his daughter.
You worry too much, my dear. It's not good for your health. Linda said she was fine, and that should be enough to calm our nerves.
No, she didn't sound fine. I know my daughter. And who is this friend she talked about? It's her first day on a foreign continent, and she's already found a friend?
Oh, come on. Linda is a very sociable girl. She's also very pretty. It's hardly surprising that she makes friends easily.
I just have a feeling that something isn't right. We shouldn't have sent her to Europe. She wasn't ready. 3 years. How will she cope for such a long time? What if something happens to her? I'll never forgive myself.
Okay. Now, come along. Stop imagining the worst. Okay, my dear? Our girl is going to be fine. She needs time to adjust, to adapt to the European way of life. Why are you giving up already? After all the sacrifice we made to send her there?
I'll only be able to relax when I've spoken to her again.
Fine. Let's wait to speak to her. But in the meantime, let's give her some space and stop worrying when there's nothing to worry about. I don't suppose you've told her yet that we don't have money to pay for her next 2 years of university?
No, I haven't. How could I? But she's a clever girl. She'll soon figure it out. She'll find a way to finish her studies.
It's true that Linda enjoys her studies in international law, but her mother is wrong to think she will quickly settle in. The first 4 months in Europe feel like the longest 4 months of her life. To make matters worse, her spending money has almost run out. The dreaded European winter has arrived. Let's join Linda now in the University Cyber Cafe, where she's chatting with Chivasi, her fiancé.
Hello, my wife-to-be.
Hello, my husband-to-be.
How are your studies? Are the Europeans treating you well?
Studies are fine. And yes, the Europeans are fine too. How are you?
Not good. Missing you like crazy. These 4 months feel like 4 years. Some good news, though. I got a job as a junior engineer.
Congrats, my dear. So happy for you. And they say there are no jobs at home.
Jobs are scarce. You need good qualifications. I was lucky.
No, not lucky. You are the right person for the job.
How are you doing financially? Do you need any help? I know Europe can be expensive, especially for students.
No, I don't need any help. I'm doing fine.
Well, if you do, just let me know. Africa can send aid to Europe too.
LOL, very funny. Got to go now, Chivasi. Sorry.
Already? Can't I see you on the webcam?
Sorry, dear. No cam on this computer. Be patient. Talk to you tomorrow. Love you.
Love you too. Take care.
Linda logs out and bows her face in shame. She has just told her first lies to the man she claims to love and wants to marry. The truth is, first, she desperately needs money. Second, she isn't going anywhere right now. And third, the computer she's on does in fact have a webcam. Linda gets up from the computer, goes to a public phone booth, and texts out Florence's number.
Hello, Florence speaking.
Hi, Flo. It's Linda.
Ah, Linda! The international lawyer, how could I forget you? Are you okay? You sound a bit sad.
Well, I've been in Europe studying for 4 months now, and I'm learning so much. But, Florence, life here is just too expensive. I see my fellow students going out every weekend. They eat out all the time, and I can't even afford to. I don't even have a proper winter coat.
Aren't your parents supporting you with pocket money?
No, they're not. I know they can't. I know they spent all their savings to pay for my studies here. I've just been talking to my boyfriend, and he's got a new job, but I can't ask him for money. Or, well, what do you think?
No, don't ask him. He's in Africa, Linda. People there need help more than people here. Besides, why do you think I told you never to tell them the truth?
Because people back home won't believe me. They won't understand.
Precisely. People back home don't care if you're a penniless student or homeless and living on the street. As long as you're in Europe, they believe you've made it. Linda, listen. Don't you worry. We'll think of a way out. Forget about your boyfriend. Look, I can give you a little cash as a friend to buy yourself some clothes, cosmetics and, you know, stuff. Let's meet up and see what we can do. You're in Europe, remember? This is where every African dreams of coming.
Oh, Florence, what can I say? I'm so, so grateful. It's so generous of you. I don't know how I can ever repay you.
Don't mention it, Linda. Just call me again tomorrow and we'll arrange a meeting. See you.
Bye, Flo.
Bye.
When Linda puts down the phone, for the first time since she came to Europe, she's really smiling. Not only has Florence promised to help her out with some cash, she suggested meeting up to discuss how Linda could earn some extra money. So what ideas does Florence have? Remember, she told Linda to forget about Chivasi. Will Linda follow her advice? We'll have to find that out next time, because we've reached the end of this 6th episode of our radio drama about migration from Africa to Europe. You're welcome to share your opinions, suggestions, and comments about illegal migration by sea by visiting our Facebook page, facebook.com/DW.LBE. You can listen to this episode again or any of the others on this or different topics on our Learning by Ear website, dw.de/DestinationEurope. Until next time, goodbye.
And as always, before we go, a reminder of our main stories. Newly inaugurated Malawian President Peter Mutharika has said economic stability and national unity will be his main priority. Cameroon says its military have killed 60 Boko Haram militants. And Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has said he is ready to enter into dialogue with the opposition. And that's all we had for you. You can always send in your suggestions, opinions and comments by SMS to +49 160 957 59510 and email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. For more news, visit our website dw.de/Africa. Thanks for listening. From me, Crispin Mwakideu. Take care.